Well, hello and welcome to what is the 58th episode of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast with me, Al Coates.
Al Coates. And me, Scott Cassandrani.
Scott Cassandrani.
Scott Cassandrani.
Scott, your beard is so bushy, it's marvellous. I can see it.
I know. I am growing it.
Are you?
I don't know if I will actually go through with this, but my plan is to be a big, bushy, bearded, kilted Scotsman for the wedding.
Well, rugged and interesting.
Yeah, but I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure I've got the patience, if that makes sense. Because once I used to be like that with my hair, you know, you'd restyle it, and then 2 days later, you could still not get that style. So you just give up, wouldn't you?
Well,
so
I might grow my tash out then, in that case.
Yeah,
and then and I can be your.
Oh, you could go for one of them.
Oh, wax it.
Yeah, you can wax it and twiddle it on the end and everything.
That would be awesome. I might just do that. That might just do that. Hey, we've got a guest this week, but I have to tell you, Scott, I've had a weekend where I have seen things that I thought I would never see.
Oh?
I have been taken to places in relation to my children's capacity for vomit in... Oh, I'm going cockley all thinking about it again. It's made me go funny.
Oh, no.
Don't.
Do you know what? I can deal with the poo. I can deal with the pee. You asked me to deal with vomit. Nope. Can't do it.
I've never... Oh. I've never seen anything like it in my life.
Oh, really?
It was the size of a dustbin lid.
No.
Onto a tiled floor. Probably an inch thick. Bright. Oh.
Oh, okay.
Bright yellow.
Oh, no.
With half-eaten Haribos in it.
Oh!
I am
oh, God.
It's making me come out funny.
Oh. Oh, dear.
I might Paula ran from the house.
I bet she did. I would have run as well, to be fair. I'd have gone out and gotten the neighbour to come and clean it up, I think.
And my daughter, eldest daughter, God bless her soul, said, because she's worked in a care home and is familiar with said body fluids, and said, don't worry, Dad, I'll do it. And she cackled like a witch as she went in there with a shovel and a wheelbarrow.
The shovel and the wheelbarrow that's normally reserved for the horses, yeah?
Yeah, oh, good grief. I am traumatised. I've never seen it. I've seen some sights. I mean, you see some sights as a parent, don't you?
Of course do, yeah.
Things you... never anticipated, but that was just truly off the hook, just wow out there. Anyway, we should quickly move on. We've got a rather marvelous guest this evening, Helen Oakwater. So I think that we should do our thing, and shall we go and find her? Is there any specific questions you want to ask her? Because she's written a new book, and I know you've heard her speak a few times.
I have, yeah. I've had her speak at some events I've done.
And she's a strong voice in the community, isn't she?
She is, yeah. And I think her experience is quite... it's not a common one, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm sure others have had similar experiences.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's up to her to tell the story, really. I think she's been very honest and open about it. But it's her story to tell, so...
Right.
But, yes.
Shall we seek her out, then, on the magic...
Let's find her on web, lad.
On the internet. Right, let's see if we can do some... Oh, hang on, let's press... Men, look for someone on the internet.
Here we go.
This
will take him half an hour, listeners.
Right, hang on. Add to call, yeah.
Yeah, we say that every time.
Hello, Helen.
Hello.
How are you?
I am great, thank you. And it's delightful to be talking to you and Scott.
Yes, what? I am here. Sorry, I've had to put myself on mute because I'm coughing. So if I go quiet, that's why.
Oh.
why are you so great, Helen? Have you been away? I mean, you know, have you been travelling? have you jacked in life in Blighty to go to sunnier climes? Come on, spill the beans.
Sure.
Asking questions you know the answer to. Yeah. I have. I have just returned actually from 3.5 months in Madeira, a lovely Portuguese island in the middle of the Atlantic. And I have been on the road and traveling for just over 6 months. I am now a nomad.
Oh.
I sold my house, I sold my possessions, and I'm travelling and deciding where eventually I might like to live. And I have no idea where that is, but I do like travelling. Mm-hmm. And I can work anywhere. I can write anywhere. So overwintering somewhere that is warmer than the UK is delightful.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's how the other half live.
2 days ago. I flew in 2 days ago. Well, yeah. Yeah. So
fabulous.
That is wonderful. Now, I read your first book maybe in 2013, 2014 maybe, Bubble Wrap Children. So I guess give us a brief introduction to people may not know who you are or kind of where you sit in this world, because we were just saying in the introduction that actually you're quite a strong voice in the adoption world. So explain to us a little bit how you got to write that first book, because I'm sure there's a little story. Tell us your story, however you want to tell it.
I hope I'm a strong voice. I think I'm a voice that isn't sort of on the scene a massive amount. I think I kind of come in and go. But, you know, I've been around for a long time. It's over 25 years since my kids arrived. And Bubble Wrap Children, I've been writing for Adoption UK for quite a number of years. And because I have an interest in future technology and I'm quite into entrepreneurship and that sort of thing, so I go on a whole load of courses, and they're quite disparate. And I started realizing that the impact of the internet and what potentially could happen with information being shared. And initially I started thinking about it from a legal point of view, and then it just widened. And I wrote a couple of articles for Adoption UK about the impact of Facebook, started saying we have to pay attention to this because birth families and the children who lived with them, they're going to be able to connect via the internet.
Yeah.
We have to start thinking about that and start future-proofing our children. And initially, I think people went, oh, for goodness sakes, you know, just sort out their privacy setting. You know, we look back on that now and snigger and whatever, but we have to remember, you know, that all the technology, it's grown exponentially and it's, you know, the rate of change is enormous. So I wrote Bubble Wrap Children basically to explain the why. Why is this connection going to happen? Why is it that adopted or long-term foster children are going to reconnect with that first family from who they were removed? And it was about looking in depth and looking down into what were the underlying reasons, mm-hmm. what was going on inside the child and also inside the birth parent, in particular the birth mother.
Because you are a birth parent yourself. I mean, I don't want to, it's your story, so you can tell it or not. But
No. I'm an adopted parent. I have.
Sorry, I didn't call you a birth parent. You're an adopted parent. Sorry.
I'm an adopted parent. Yeah. It's fairly late at night. We've all probably and you know it's fine.
Thank you.
But recognizing that birth parents. The phrase that I use is still screaming. And I got that, in fairness, from a book that was published by After Adoption. And Lynn Charlton was one of the editors. And she and I talked about it quite a lot. We had some overlap in terms of some content. And the idea that actually anyone who's lost a child is screaming. However they've lost that child.
Not unreasonably.
No, absolutely. And the idea that I think people don't realise that just because a birth parent could not care for the child doesn't mean they don't care about them.
Yeah.
And often we know that particularly birth mothers, and I think my focus tends to be on birth mothers rather than birth fathers. And they've had a child growing in them for 9 months. And if they've got drug and alcohol issues or those sorts of things, they may not remember actually what happened to the child. So there is this distortion of reality, whatever reality is, and everybody has a different reality and a different truth. So to help people understand that they need to think differently. And I was back in...
Sorry to interrupt you, because you are a very articulate speaker, but I'm going to corral you because I've got lots of questions and I'm not up for long answers, right? I'm to the point. I'm hitting the desk purposefully. But was the book well received? Do you think it... I mean, it was ahead of its time. I remember reading... I remember seeing the title and thinking, oh, I want to read that book. I need to read that book. That book makes sense to me. I read it and I thought, yes, because you've got quite a unique voice. Was it well received, and kind of what's been the fallout from that?
Yes, it was very well received. It was published in January 2012, and it resulted in the front page headline of the Times, leading with Facebook threat to adopted children.
Get you.
Get me. It was not planned. And I had two really fun days of being a media tart and on television, and Sky came and filmed me at home. And
that's Scott's everyday life.
I have to say, sitting opposite Eddie Mayer in the PM program on Radio 4, I think that was the highlight.
That's
for me.
It, yeah.
So, yes, it was very well received. And it obviously got an enormous amount of publicity. Mm. And I think the thing I hope it's done has changed people's thinking. And I know that I've had feedback from people who've said they now approach contact with the birth parents very differently as a result of reading that book.
Were you not tempted to write a follow-up? Because that's 7 years ago. The world has, like you said, exponentially moved on. And I think that we need another book. We recently had someone on the podcast who'd written a similar book, a very academic book. So why didn't you write a follow-up to that book as opposed to the one you've just written?
Because actually I want to write a number of books. Right. And actually, no. In fairness, Al, one of the things that I did while I was in Madeira was actually go through Bubble Wrap Children with the idea of revising it.
Yeah.
And actually I put it on pause because I'm not sure whether it needs to be revised or it actually just restructured and put into a brand new book.
Yeah.
So I'm at, I've got to work it out.
Yeah, I see that.
I remember when I saw you in November, we were talking about that, weren't we?
I mean, I was accosted at the Adoption UK conference by a number of people, including Daniela Shanley, who said, "You've got to revise the book, Helen." I have sat and done a lot of working it through, and I can't decide what the best thing to do with it is. So bear with me as to what will happen.
I think it's interesting because the thing is, it's still actually quite current in some ways because, you know, I sit on an adoption panel still, and I have done for a few years, and it's always mentioned in the majority of adoption panels about when they're talking about social media, because a lot of adoption panel chairs have a, you know, how do I word this to make it sound correct? They may be that little bit more mature, so they may not have a really fantastic understanding of social media and the internet and stuff like that. So they're always doing that. So it's still very current. So, you know, maybe it just needs an addition.
Actually, it's not about social media.
I know, but you know what I'm saying.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And it's about the why. It's the underlying reasons. And I don't think those change. Yeah. So Bubble Wrap Children is I suppose, the first 80% of it is still current. Yeah. And then the sections where people's stories, the anecdotes, I mean, yeah, they've moved on massively.
Yeah.
And that's the bit that needs to be renewed, looked at. But there's also, I think, a whole load of other technology that is coming online that will have an influence and will affect how we do things in the adoption and fostering world.
Yeah, I can recommend Julie Samuel's book, Digital Challenges and Adoption. I think that really she started to open up some of those interesting ideas. But I mean, it's a very academic book, so it's not that accessible, but really is a good read. And I think that what was very interesting was she said that actually that there are the solutions to the digital problems are predominantly analog, in the sense that we diffuse the situations through very practical conversations with our children. If we're trying to digitally ring fence our children, we will fail. So that was really interesting. I'm going to move you on because I'm conscious of the time, and we're not really here to talk about your old book because you've sold that one, haven't you? That's done its thing.
The theme I think that runs through that book, through Bubble Wrap Children, also through the new one, Want to Adopt, it's about future-proofing children. And it's about looking at what's going on inside that child and then what needs to be modified, changed, adapted, understood, so that that child can then grow in a way that's healthy. Yeah. And for many of our kids, we know that they've got beliefs that they're not good enough, that they are bad, that the world's a dangerous place, all of that. And that's where the focus has to be, not on the superficial external stuff. So it is working on the child, the inside of the child. And I think that has to start with prospective adopters and professionals understanding that that's where it starts from.
So your new, tell me what the title of your new book is, tell me what kind of inspired it, because it's a very, I've read it, I've got a draft copy, and I've got some interesting thoughts about it, but I want to know why you wrote it and what inspired it, and just, you know, what's going on there. Then
I have stood on many platforms and put one hand out and said, you have to move from your own, from wanting your own healthy baby to taking on someone else's hurt child. And until you're in that place, you're not ready to adopt. So you have to understand that you're going to share this child with somebody else, because there's always a first family. The child is going to come with some damage, some hurt, and it's not going to be a baby, it's an older child. And as a result of that, you have to be a therapeutic parent. And people, I think sometimes professionals are a bit frightened to say it. And I think as an adopter, I can stand and say things that professionals can't, because I have permission to say that to other adopters, whereas a professional may not. And you have to be adaptable, flexible. You have to know something about trauma, and you have to realize that this child is not going to be like the child of all your friends. And until you've got that, if you don't take that on board, you're just going to have your expectations dashed, smashed, and ripped apart. And so for me, it's about help. It's kind of like, what do I wish I'd known 25 years ago? And I wish that I'd known a whole host of things, including lots of coaching stuff, which is included in the book.
Because your book is separated into three very, very clear parts. And I do have some, questions, because I read it. And but you broke it into sort of, I want my own healthy baby, the stepping stones, which is kind of the process, isn't it? And then a bit more about kind of the impact of early adversity on children. But you speak with a very unique voice, and I'm not quite sure how to describe it, because you inhabit this murky world between sort of academic and professional, don't you?
I don't think I'm academic. I read books. The ones with lots of long words I do struggle with.
Yeah, me too.
I've gone off because I'm interested in personal development, and I stumbled into NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and I found answers to questions I didn't even know I had. And it made sense of the nonsense of my children's behavior in a way that nothing else did. And it was the first time that I'd come to the I suppose the phrase that I took away was beliefs drive behavior. Now, when you say that, it's like, well, duh. But nobody had actually put it in that format in any prep group or anything that I'd come across. And it was like, oh, wow. So I started exploring that. So I've gone and I've studied lots and lots of coaching, lots and lots of trauma work in particular. Yeah. And because I've worked as a coach, I work with adult clients who had, you know, really shitty stuff when they were children, you know, technically. And if I work with an adult who's been through some of these adverse childhood experiences that we know about, then I know that there is transformation that's possible because I've worked with clients and I've seen it. And it's such a privilege. So that, I think, is the world that I inhabit. Yeah. And I call a spade a shovel.
Well, a spade is not a shovel.
I can confirm.
Yeah, but that makes no sense because a spade is not a shovel.
Yeah, just don't, that's semantics, all right? Shush. We know what you mean, Helen. I know what you mean, Helen. No, so does people that know.
No, hang on.
Here we go. He's off.
A spade is not a shovel. They're two different things. Am I missing something?
Yeah.
No, I think the point is I don't mince my words.
All right, okay, sorry. I'm just totally confused. I thought it was a nuanced argument.
No. And I say things bluntly.
All right, sorry.
Lots of people don't like. So spade and shovel.
I'm sorry.
To be fair, if a spade hit you in the face, it wouldn't be quite as bad as when a shovel hit you in the face. I think that's really the kind of the visual that you need on that one, isn't it?
Right. Okay. I'm sorry, Helen. I'm just totally. I come from a world of construction, I've recently bought a shovel, and it's not a spade. Anyway, But I know. Yeah. Sorry. I take your point. You call things as you see them.
I call things as I see them, and I don't do bullshit. And I've seen so often. I think professionals in particular,
yeah,
who I think are quite often frightened to say really tough stuff. And I don't. I think I'm fairly honest about what happens. And my experience is that in particular when I say those things to parents, and I've done this, you know, around the world now, that it confirms people's reality. And so I will say something and an adoptive parent I'll watch and I'll see people who start having tears rolling down their face because suddenly somebody has actually said something,
yeah,
that they, I speak the unspeakable. And that, I think, is one of the things that does make me different. Makes me Marmite. I mean, love me, hate me.
Yeah.
I think people, there isn't much of an in-between.
Right.
And there are people who,
but you seem quite cool with that.
You know, I am. And again, because I've been around quite a long time, I have people who come up to me and say, you said blah, 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 whatever it was. And as a result, I did X, Y, Z. Thank you. And that's, yeah, I mean, that's terrific. For me, that means I've done something that's useful and helpful. It's not sugarcoated. It's being real.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we lack that reality in adoption, particularly again in the, you know, in the early stages with prospective adopters, and the view that some professionals have that, oh, if we really tell them all the truth, they'll run away. I don't think it's true. And it's one of the reasons I think that the fact that we do not share all the truth about the children that are coming to us and all the stuff that's in the files that doesn't get shared or it gets diluted is absolutely wrong, because it's inside the child and things will get sparked and touched within them,
yeah,
and they'll have some kind of behavioural warmth, and it's trauma-triggered behaviour. And if you don't know that child lay in a cot for 3 days,
yeah,
without being
Can I take you back? Because I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think you've moved on from preparation. I think we were talking beforehand, Scott and I, and we were thinking about.
Yeah, I had a question about that. Actually.
Yeah, Scott had a question.
I had a question. Woo, go Scott. It was about actually because you've mentioned prospective adopters a couple of times now in the last few minutes. So, and in terms of that kind of filter for prospective adopters, obviously part of that is the preparation training. So. I know the answer to this question, but do you think it's fit for purpose? And second rate to that, how would you effectively change adopter preparation?
Yeah. Can I add to that without actually grinding adoption to a halt? I think we're probably playing slightly devil's advocate, aren't we, Scott, in asking those questions?
Fine. Okay. Is it fit for purpose? I'm not sure if I can really answer that.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I'll tell you what I would do differently, which is I would put a massive amount of training in between approval and the child coming.
Yes.
And I would continue with ongoing training the whole time.
Compulsory.
Compulsory is kind of, I think you have to check on the quality. So if you compare, for example, foster care training, some of the compulsory stuff, my understanding, some of the compulsory stuff is kind of the nuts and bolts and have you, you know, doing the first aid and that kind of thing. Mm. I think the training that people have to have is about understanding themselves, understanding the child, and building their skills.
But you said understanding yourself, and I think that's maybe the key one that is missing, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that I've written Want to Adopt, because there's lots of stuff in there about changing self. And the other thing that's in Want to Adopt, she says, plugging her book, this is not just for prospective adopters. It's got so much stuff in for existing adopters.
Yeah.
But you say you want to adopt, and I mean that it could have been four sentences of a title. It absolutely has material in there that is useful for foster carers, adopters, existing adopters, prospectives, special guardians. The bottom line is it's for people who are parenting traumatized children and want to grow and need to grow. Because if you don't grow as an adopter, you're going to fail.
I mean, I found it as a reading it, I thought it was really good because it opens up some really good ideas, interesting ideas, like even just the Jahari windows?
Yes, the Jahari.
I was wanting to say calamari windows, but that's clearly something different. This idea of what
you know about self and what others know about you, and it forms a matrix, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting because we're all at different places, you know, day one of adoption prep. And we need to kind of unpack that very clearly, don't we?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So you were saying about preparation. Scott's question was, is it fit for purpose? What would you do differently? And do you think that there's parity across all agencies? What's your experience of adoption prep? Have you presented on those courses? Do you get invited to them?
I do sometimes. I have... And, you know, my days of sitting on an adoption panel, I mean, I've, you know, there are times when I've wanted to metaphorically bang my head on a desk and just think, you know, have you been taught anything? Adoption preparation, I think, varies enormously across agencies, social workers. Is there consistency? No. Should there be? Well, I guess there should, but exactly what those criteria would be, I think, is quite hard to assess. And I think the other thing is that you can deliver the same course to 20 people and they will all come away with different understandings. And I think that's why it has to be ongoing and continue. So that is key. And if adopters have the view that once their children have arrived, they no longer need any training, I don't think they should have been approved.
But you know full well. You know full well, though, that adopters say lots of things before they've got the adoption order.
Yes.
If I'm being cynical.
And I think that's true. And if we don't convince them of the need of their own personal growth and their own adaptation, then that says something about the quality of the training. If we've not got them to understand that the child that they are adopting, who my shorthand is always, is Tim, who is the traumatized infant maltreated, if they can't understand what's going on inside of Tim, and they think that just with a bit of love and a bit of extra this and a bit of extra that, Tim will be fine, then we're failing the adopters and we're failing Tim. And yeah. I think sometimes adopters, they're not sold down the river. I can't think of exactly the right phrase, but it's,
yeah.
They're being sold a dream that isn't there and isn't, and it's not appropriate. And my experience is that when you tell people the full truth, their response is, hell yeah, I'm up for that.
Well, I was thinking about writing a blog recently about what could somebody have said to me to put me off? And I thought that's a really interesting thought. What could have been said to me to have changed my mind about me and about the children I could take at, you know, on whenever, June 1999? And I'm not sure, because I think that people have set their course, and there's this you open up lots of really interesting issues in the book about sort of disguised compliance in adopters through the adoption process and people saying what they need to say to get what they want, which is a kind of, as a social worker, I'm kind of that's something that I'm looking out for. So that's really interesting. I was going to ask you about another issue from your book, which I thought was really interesting. You consistently say this little phrase, which is adoption is for children, not adults. And I just wanted to say, but that's not true, is it? That isn't the case.
The phrase I use is adoption is a service for children. Yeah. And I absolutely believe that. I absolutely believe that. And you could say adoption is a service for children, long-term fostering is a service for children. That is what it should be.
Ah, however,
that's what it should be. That's what it should be. That's what it, as in an ideal world, that's what it is. However, adopters have needs as well, and you have to match that, balancing it as a service for children and for the adults who are looking to become parents. And again, that's where I think the honesty comes in, because one of the things that I see, and I'm on, you know, probably the same as you guys, on various Facebook groups and things, and most of the time I lurk. And something that I've noticed is that prospective adopters will put something up, go, we've got the adoption order. Yeah. He's now 100% ours. And I think, oh, shit, he's not.
He never will be
100% yours. Right. And that's setting you up to fail. And I think we do set adopters up to fail. I think the same applies in foster care. It's not unique to adoption. And again, globally, you know, we in the UK have a lot more adoption. In other countries, like in Australia, they have the same principle, but it's called foster care. You know, much less adoption. So setting adopters up to fail is wrong as well. Of course it is. And we set them up to fail because we're not truthful. Does that answer that question?
Yeah, I didn't get that from the book. It felt like you were trying to convince me that it's a, or you were kind of arguing the point that it's a system that is solely for children. And I just think it's, that might be a lofty ideal, but I'm not sure that's ever possible, because you get people coming because they want children. because of their needs and their journey. I do think it is a, I mean, I read it and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was, you know, it opened up, it gave me the opportunity to think about things again. You know, you raised the issue around relationships, which I thought was really good, about the challenges and the, which is stuff that we've touched on, haven't we, Scott? It sounds like we talked about our relationship. But no, we've touched on the impact on relationships. And you're very honest in the book. Is it hard writing a book? Because you do, as much as you don't tell your story, you do reveal a lot about yourself.
Yes, and I don't tell my story because, you know, I mean, a couple of people have said, oh, you know, you should, you know, oh, is it an autobiography or you ought to write an autobiography? And the answer to that, I think, is just that's really dull. I would not want to do that because I think that's a bit self-indulgent. However, I think my own experience and my story, yeah, I think it helps because I also get really hacked off when I read a book that somebody's written that implies that everything in their world is perfect and lovely and they never did anything wrong. And I just think, oh, come on. You know, that doesn't help somebody who's actually on their knees sobbing or on their knees with exhaustion and thinking, can I get through this? Or, you know, I had a tough start in this way or that way. I just think being real is important, and we all make mistakes and we all have errors. And there are other times that we can look back and go, my God, that was amazing. You know, didn't I do well? And for some of us, you know, we don't get the outcome that we expected. And I think, again, with adoption, there's so much around expectations.
Yeah.
And where do you set the bar? And, you know, I've got friends and we hook up and we talk and we go, do you know what? We've done all right. They're all still alive. And that in itself is something. And
Helen, would you agree, though, that this kind of expectation set upon us because of the process that we have to follow? And I guess part of it comes from, you know, that want to be a parent. But also the kind of second part of that is because your life's involved with so many kind of and when I say professionals, I mean social workers and, you know, perhaps teachers and things like that, because you feel like you're being judged all the time because you've been through that part of the process and you're trying to make a difference because, you know, it's very sometimes very quickly that you realise just what you've taken on. Do you think that's where the pressure comes from? Or do you think it's just human instinct that that's the way we are?
I think probably all of the above. sorry, Scott, but I think that is the reality, and it is all of those things, not necessarily at the same time, but at different times, and sometimes all at the same time.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you've had a tough time with your kid. You go into school, and you have some patronising teacher. I mean, I can give you an example that's not in the book. With one of mine where the teacher said to me and about my daughter was about that sort of age, and the teacher said to me, oh, it's all right, I know all about adopted children, I have lots of children in my class whose parents are divorced,
because that's the same thing, isn't it?
And I stood there like a gaping fish. Because
speechless. Helen was speechless.
What can you say when somebody is inhabiting a completely different planet? A completely different planet. So one of the things, again, in my writing and my training is I want to create things that will change that teacher's mind. Because I know that I could have said all sorts of that actually the day before I'd stood up in the Palace of Westminster and presented to MPs and members of the House of Lords. But I go to school the next day and I'm just deemed an over-anxious parent.
Yeah.
That's the sort of challenge I think it's that's really tough.
Yeah, and I think I'd agree with you about that, particularly because, you know, I, you know, maybe not past the Westminster, but, you know, other kind of discussions that I have through work and other things, and you can suggest things in school, and it's because you don't have that kind of professional qualification of being a teacher, it's very much ignored as someone who doesn't know what they're talking about. So I think I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Is there any good stories about adoption, though, Helen? I mean, I'm sure you must know some.
Yes, I think it depends on, you know, what do you classify what do you classify as a good story? And I will tell you what adoption has done for me. I have explored myself, studied remarkable people. I've learned amazing things. And I've dumped a whole load of my own crap and, you know, historical garbage and become, I think, a much better person than I would have been if I hadn't adopted. And yes, I'm traveling around the world and I'm having all sorts of adventures and I don't, if gone down the, in inverted commas, you know, a standard parenting route or normal way of being.
Yeah.
I know other adopters who I think have done that same thing. We've taken that road less traveled and we've seen things, highs and lows in particular, that will change us forever.
Yeah.
And I think we end up with a different perspective on life.
Mm-hmm.
I have a little theory, which is that everybody has what they believe to be difficulties or challenges or stresses from a 0 to 10. And if your life has been relatively easy, then let's say something like the death of a parent might be an 8, 9, 10.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been through the challenges that you might have been with parenting adopted children and you've been to court, you've been to, you know, you've done the interviews in police cells, you've dealt with self-harming, you've dealt then something like that is going to come in at a 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And I actually had that, you know, while my mother was dying, I got sympathy for my mother dying, but all the shit I was going through with in one of my kids in particular, which for me was a 9, compared to my mother dying, which was a 4 or 5, compared to that. So I know I can cope with an awful lot, and cope with an awful lot more. And now I can just deal with anything. You know, it's like somebody scratches your car and you go, yeah, okay. You know, yes. I mean, nobody died, any blood.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas somebody else might go, oh my God, you know, they just have the shoes I want to do. And they get all drama-y about it. And it's like, oh, come on.
But that's the idea, isn't it? Is it Rutter, the academic who's written about resilience, and he talks about this idea of stealing, in that through adversity, we become more resilient. And it's kind of measurable almost, but actually it's not necessarily, it wasn't mentioned in the preparation groups, was it? You know, I think we...
I was slightly challenged that in that you need the skills to be resilient. They end up with some serious challenges because we didn't upskill them enough when they were younger. We didn't do the therapeutic work that was needed. I mean, we haven't talked about doing therapeutic life story work and all of that before they hit the teens, which is... I could bang on for a long time, but I won't, Al, I promise.
No, it's fine. No, I mean, the resilience, I'm currently doing a pilot for what's called Friends Resilience in schools and with adults and with children, all kinds of people. And yeah, absolutely, you build resilient skills. But the evidence is that people who've lived through crap get pretty good, get used to it, and they become not necessarily stronger, but they become steeled to that experience.
I'm sighing and humping at this one because I struggle a little bit with this one, because I think that sometimes that can actually make you less detached to your own feelings as well, if you're not fully equipped to be able to deal with it, if that makes sense. So, you know, you made reference to death there, Helen. You know, I mean, very recently we've had a death in the family, and it really, I wouldn't say it hit me as hard as some of the deaths that have happened in my family, but it certainly kind of came as a very big shock. It had a lot of kind of similarities to another death in my family that I took quite badly, so it brought back a lot for me. But I don't generally get that way about things. Where did that come from? Because actually, I kind of detached myself a little bit from some of the stuff that goes on in my life because I have to. Otherwise, you know, it's a really interesting one that you're both kind of talking about, because I'm sitting at it looking at my own kind of personal view and thinking, okay.
Like group therapy.
Yeah, and I think, sometimes it's also about the depth of adverse, you know, the adverse childhood experiences, the depth, age. I've recently read a couple of books. I'm going to not remember the name, but it's Gabe Mattel, who writes about addiction. And he says every single addict that he has come across has significant abuse in their childhood. And the other book I was reading was Blue, about the police commander. I think it's John Sutherland from memory, whose experience as a police officer and ending up as a borough commander is about, again, the children who have witnessed domestic violence and the impact on them. And again, I think that all of that is true, and it helps for me. There's this absence of joined up thinking. There's the absence of systems thinking in what happens in prisons. Oh, what happened to that child 20 years before?
Yeah.
And it sounds really harsh, but people don't think about poor, you know, oh, baby P, what a tragedy. Yes, yes, yes. They would not say that about the baby P's that survived who are now in prison and their outcomes look so awful because people join those dots.
It's interesting, the adverse childhood experience ACE movement, asking slightly different questions and creating an environment where people are comfortable with that. And one of the things they say is, rather than asking what have you done, the question is, what happened to you? I'm going to pull you back to your book because we've had almost an hour here. We're pushing towards the hour. So tell me, when is the book released?
The book comes out on Thursday, the 14th of March.
Ooh.
And a week today.
It is. It's a week today. Yes. And the launch day prices are slashed.
Already.
I know. Oh, it's absolutely.
It's obscene.
The Kindle edition will be $1.99, and the printed version will be $6.50. So that's half price for the printed edition, and the Kindle is normally $6.99. So it's kind of like that launch. Buy it then.
Unfortunately, this podcast won't go out until the 17th, but. What I will do I'll post and say that it's out and about, and but I think it's for $1.99 on Kindle, that's a blooming bargain, and I would recommend getting it. And I do tend to recommend things. I didn't even get a free copy, so yeah, gutted about. And normally we like to give one away free, but we didn't even get one to give away. That's shameful.
That's the difference, with us being so independent, we can afford to do stuff like that because we don't depend on getting freebies to have to, you know, to have to endorse things, do we?
You did get a free PDF. But I will organise. I know. I mean, rock and roll, eh? If you would like a free gift or whatever, we can organize that. Bear in mind, boys, I'm sorry, but I did end up staying in Madeira an extra month because of conference.
Breaking my heart.
I know. The conference I was speaking at got cancelled, so I had the choice to, you know, at the halfway through February. Do I return to the UK or stay in Madeira?
Tough it out.
So I'm not as organised as I might be on all of that. I think I'm much better at writing books and training than doing all the admin-y, doodah-y stuff afterwards.
I'll tell you what we will
obviously give the gift away to a listener. So it will go to a very good home.
Yes.
But when we receive it, we will then run a little competition on another podcast to give it away. So there's no rush, but there is a rush, if you know what I mean.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm sure we can have a conversation away from this and
I'm sure
work out a way of doing it.
Of course.
Well, yeah. I'll get my lawyers to speak to yours. Something like that. Well, Helen, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's been a laugh, and in some ways, far too short, because clearly you've got so much to say. But you are a professional speaker, so what would we expect?
Exactly.
Well, thank you. And gentlemen, it's been an absolute delight. I feel very flattered to be included in your podcast, because I have listened to, not all of them, let's be fair.
Obviously.
And otherwise you wouldn't have come on.
So thank you very much for inviting me. And I hope people enjoy the book.
But
it changes their thinking. And I think for me, the fundamental thing is, if you understand, you can work out your own way of doing things. So for me, it's about helping people understand the why. And the understanding, and they can work out their own what and how to apply it to their own situation.
Excellent. Right, well, thank you very much, Alan. I'm going to say goodbye to you. Have a fantastic time, and I hope you don't have to suffer the English weather for too long before you travel off somewhere nice again.
It's lovely to be back in the UK. I was actually in Folkestone this morning, having done some more recording, and the wind was blowing and the sea was wild, just as it was in Madeira much of the time. And it was fabulous.
Excellent.
Absolutely fabulous.
Well, excellent. Well, enjoy. And I hope you have a great couple of weeks and good luck with the book launch.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye, Helen.
Bye.
Whew, so that was Helen Urquhart.
It was. She's got many
Bless
opinions.
Her heart. Do you know what? Well, she does. And I think the thing with Helen is that she's so passionate.
Mm.
That is definitely the word I'd use for her. She has a lot of things that she needs to say. But, you mentioned it yourself in the interview. She is a speaker. She needs to know what she's speaking about. She needs to be able to explain it properly. And I think that's...
Yeah.
But we only have an hour. But we always say this with guests. We've run out of time, so
I felt bad because I was a bit butt in at the beginning.
You were. Mm. You were a bit Paxman tonight.
Do you think? I don't think I was Paxman.
No, you weren't Paxman. You were more Peston or whatever his name is.
I didn't go the full Martin Barrow.
You're a bit. No, thankfully. Maybe that's what she came along for. Maybe she thought. Maybe she listened to the Barrow one and she went, "Oh, I want to be a part of
that."
Come on. Bring it on. there is something very intriguing about Helen, I have to say. And I'm not sure what it is. I think it's all of her experience and the fact that she's been able to kind of write it into pages. Twice. Because it might be personal, but it's also kind of a practical kind of thing that she's giving us when she's writing books, isn't
it? I find it really intriguing having read the book that she reveals so much of herself without actually saying anything about herself particularly. She shares a few anecdotes. But I just think that it's clear that she's experienced her own challenges. But I think that she inhabits this really peculiar place in the adoption book world, because and I kind of agree with her, that she doesn't want to write her own story. She says, why bother? But she wants to help. And she's not an academic. It's by her own admission, and she's not a social worker. So the skills she brings are quite unique. And having read it,
it's a peer thing, isn't it? It's a peer thing for us because, we're always banging on about peer support. And, this podcast is testament to that. But you know, if you can bring kind of a view and be able to write it up in such a way that people can understand it, then why wouldn't you? You know, I'm same as you. I've got no interest in writing my own story because who'd be interested, sort of thing. So, yeah.
I'd love you to write your story. It was a Tuesday and I was wearing my kilt.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
And I said to Tris, let's adopt a wee bairn.
A wee bairn?
A wee bairn. Oh, to hell with it. We'll take three.
Oh, that's all turned out so well.
Did you wear a kilt to your panel?
No, I didn't, actually. I didn't.
You're ashamed to your nation.
Casual business dress because I thought, you know, it's panel, so
you,
we should.
You open your wardrobe to a casual business dress section and...
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I pressed a button, I typed it into the computer and it spun round for me, yeah. And it put an outfit together.
Nice.
So, yeah, but I thought it was a really, really interesting chat.
It was.
As ever, you butted in quite often, but, you know, that's fine.
You were quiet because you weren't paying attention to your microphone discipline.
Yes, I know. I do apologise. It's because I'm on my white one, because my office I can't get into at the minute.
I think you may have ruined the whole thing.
Yeah, anyway. Exactly. So anyway, apart from all that...
Yes.
Any more news from Court's Mansions?
No? Oh, the vomit. Oh.
Okay, right. I'll go there again.
No.
Should we move on from the vomit?
No, it's been a really intriguing week, but nothing particularly. No, just the same... Well,
but without mentioning any names, you've got some new neighbours almost, haven't you?
Yes, I have, and that's true.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, yes. We're not here to tell their story, but
no.
You know, I know them as well. I know them actually. Yeah, that's interesting how I know them. But anyway,
all right, okay.
You know that story.
Did I tell you my story about the day they moved in?
Go on. We'll call them Ian's. Should we just call them by their initials?
No, we'll call that two. Well, they all will be revealed in the good time. Anyway, two friends came up to live very close to where I live, and deep north. And we went there to help them literally as the van was unpacking because they don't know that many people around us. And one of my children unraveled in glorious Technicolor Dolby surround sound widescreen full on. So literally as they're moving into their new house in their new street with their new neighbors making a new impression, one of my children is in the street going, shouting at me, "You're an effing C. You're an effing, effing C," shouting, which is probably the worst we've ever had. And I just kind of thought, I can't believe this I've done to them. So I tried to kind of, you know, when you're trying to contain and you can't, how do you stop that? How would you stop that?
Well, I couldn't. Simple.
But you're thinking all Norman...
When they get to that level, that's it. You've lost it. You've gone. They've lost it. Not you've lost it, they've lost it. I think I probably would have just popped my running shoes on, even though I don't have any, and just ran.
Well, ironically, that was what came to that she wanted to vent her ire at me, and only I. So I took it to walk through the estate just to share the joy with the whole street.
Yeah, why not?
The cul-de-sac. And took her off for a little walk, and she was just spitting feathers, and I thought, I am going to get so arrested. But hey, right now, night in the cell seems like a nice, warm, dry place. Yeah. So that was my story.
It's a bit of a break for you, isn't it? A bit of a break for you.
You're the someone you were going to mention. How's things with you anyway?
Yeah, all good. I was going to mention, because actually, you know how we always dip into something that's going on in our life. So obviously, wedding is fast approaching. We're two months and 3 days away.
Excellent.
I know, getting very excited.
Yes.
Need to start maybe putting some plans in order. Maybe need to book the venue or something. I don't know what we need to talk about.
Scottish man skirts.
We do, yes, we do. Interestingly... suddenly mummy has just tweeted about dyeing her hair for the wedding because she's got her wedding in a couple of weeks. And I was sat behind suddenly mummy because we had a staff conference, staff retreat a couple of days ago.
As you do.
So I kind of made a comment on Twitter and ran away because I said, well, I was sat behind you, but I'm not going to say whether you should die or not.
You are such a bitch.
I know. But anyway, so this wedding thing, so it was supposed to be quite a small affair that I'm having. It was supposed to be around the 50 mark. And currently we're up at 90. And part of that contribution is, I'm sure you remember a couple of weeks ago, I had to go to a funeral in Canada because my cousin passed away, sadly.
Yeah.
And what that's done is that's really brought elements of family and being and appreciation of life, not being forever kind of thing together. So I've got a lot of Canadians coming to the wedding. They've all booked. And my cousin said to me tonight, I'll book the flight, but only if you mention me on the podcast. So
does he listen to the podcast?
Apparently so.
Wow.
Apparently
so. And there's me wearing my lumberjack shirt.
I know, yeah. And you can put on a Canadian accent now. Go on.
The hell I am. That's my job. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe maybe he can teach you how to do that a bit better when you meet him.
Maybe he'll knock my teeth out with a Canadian ice hockey stick.
He is a police officer.
Is
so,
he?
Not a mountain police officer. Not a mountie. Yeah. So, you know, the lumberjack thing, you know, you've just made that so... You've just really given them all the ammunition there. So anyway, yes, I did. Oh, my God. I don't know whether I made you walk into that one or not, actually. Just for the record, Mr. Al Coates is actually in a little bit of a fit of hysteria at the minute. I wish we were on film, actually, because it is quite funny. It's quite... Oh my days. I'm not sure how long I can keep this going.
I don't know why I found that funny.
Which part? See, now, I'm just laughing because you're laughing. Anyway, so Michael, knock your teeth out. So there's a number of Canadians coming, and I said I'd mention them, because Mike and I. Without going too deep and meaningful and making you feel bad about your laughter, but Mike and I are both kind of through our siblings' deaths only children now, so we found a new kind of connection in some ways, which is quite, you know, it's quite bizarre.
That's
so
complicated.
Yeah, Mike and Tanya and Isabella and Melissa, hello, thank you for listening, because I know you are listening. But you, Al, will meet him in May.
Yeah, he's knocking my teeth out.
So anyway, I just want to mention them because not only that, there's people just coming out of the woodwork who are saying, oh, you're getting married. And I'm like, yeah, but you're not invited. And then there's some people who I'm inviting and they're not wanting to come. So you
really?
Know, no names mentioned. Hugh Thornberry. I think it's because he's getting married 2 weeks later, isn't it?
Oh, it's all about him.
I know. I mean, I'm going to his wedding.
Me too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because we're going to podcast it. We're going to film it. We're going to Facebook Live.
Yeah, we're going to crash the wedding.
We're going to make some money out of this. We're going to sell it to the Sun.
Yeah.
We're going to say, you know, the strapline is going to be CBE man, you know.
Get married?
Anyway. Yeah, well. Yeah,
that won't work.
No, it won't. And anyway, I'm joking.
I did notice, sorry to stop you, but what I have realised is there's actually quite a bit of, there's a lot of runners who listen to the podcast. So if you're running and you're listening to the podcast, keep going. Just keep going. Couch to 10K.
Do an extra mile. Do an extra mile.
Keep going.
Just for me.
Push. Keep pushing. Just go for it now. Push harder. Push harder.
Go.
If you can't taste blood.
Run.
If you can't taste blood, you're not running properly. Remember, pain is just weakness leaving your body.
Oh my days, I can't believe you just said that. Anyway, on that giddy note, and just one final thing before we do finish. The last podcast,
yes,
because I was traveling and I was listening to it, sometimes if I'm traveling, I've got my earbuds in, I don't tend to hit stop. I just let the next one play.
Yes, yes.
And you put the blimmin' outtakes of us trying to record the intro to that podcast right on the end. And I don't know if people actually realize they're on there.
They will.
But that one had me chuckling. That had me chuckling because it was like, of course.
Do you know, I've been doing that for ages, putting the outtakes on. Have you not heard them?
No.
Because you look and you go, oh, it's got 6 minutes left, but they've finished. And then there's... All right, I'm not telling you.
I just thought it was the music. So I like the music as well. I love the music.
Thank you.
So, but anyway, so if you've just edited half this podcast out, then, you know, keep listening, listeners, after the music, because there's more to come.
There's nothing in this one, because we've recorded nothing mildly amusing.
No,
anyway, let's go, because I'm bored now.
Yeah, I know, I'm bored as well. You've had your giggle now.
Anyway, that's it. Well, look after yourself, don't drink poison, and remember, kids, always wear your wellies.
For what?
Everything.
Let's not go there.
No.
Night-night, Adam.
Night-night. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah. Whatever.